Okay, this is continuing with Parsons on 19 September 78.
Okay, we're back in business now. You said there were two effects. One was the long-range propagation.
Yes, and the other was unidentified objects, which were thought mostly to be birds. They had a lot of trouble with birds.
Mm-hmm.
Various kinds.
Flocks, I guess, especially.
Yes, that's right. They were detecting thunderclouds as well under certain circumstances. This was the beginning, therefore, of radio meteorology.
Right.
And because of this and the beginnings of thinking that we had about extraterrestrial sources of one kind or another, we got together and talked about these things.
What time now are you talking about?
We're talking about 1944, 45.
Mm-hmm.
There had been interchange between the various services on the problem when we were getting near to the limits of performance.
Right.
It's related to the jamming problems that were arising.
Mm-hmm.
When were we being jammed? When were there unexplained causes of...
Right. When was it natural? When was it the enemy, you know?
Yes. And over the passage of time, things got a little bit hazy. But we gradually got together on these things, and it seemed there was a need to establish what these extraterrestrial sources were, when they were really extraterrestrial.
Right.
So with very little money and no real official backing, we started investigating it. Well, we hadn't got any money. There was no deliberate financing. Of course, in the war,
right,
there was no such thing as a budgeting of expense. If we needed something to explore a probable or a defense need or an idea that might improve performance of equipment, it just happened.
Right. Yeah, you didn't apply for a grant. And,
no, one didn't have to do it. Only if it meant modifications to the equipment. But we wrote a report and recommended it, and it was done overnight.
Mm-hmm. These are what were called the short scatter echoes, I believe was the term.
Yes. I didn't have anything to do with it, with that work at all.
But you, as you say, you say Eastwood was the one that
worked on it. Did quite a lot of work on that. And this is how we came in contact with him.
And, of course, these turned out to be reflections from ionized meteor trails.
That's right, yes. And that is what put us back into looking at it, of course.
Right.
Now, my role in all this, really, was more especially the optimization of the performance of the equipment,
mm-hmm.
the design of the modification, and a certain amount of the actual watching, the experimental work.
The observing, yeah.
Yeah. What I'm trying to say is that the theoretical aspects of it were primarily Hayes and Phillips with his mathematical background.
Mm-hmm.
We used to meet together very frequently and discuss these things, and if there was an idea that we ought to be doing something, if we alter the pulse lengths or we alter
right.
the aerial, I would go out and do it.
Right, so you were really the hardware man.
That's right, absolutely.
In this group.
And I used to rush from one thing to another. When we began to get competition, like the Americans started looking at the moon, for example, a bit later on, we thought we would have a go, but we found it impracticable with our resources. We did a few calculations on whether we thought it was possible. I would lengthen the pulse of our transmitter, this is purely radar measurement,
right.
to the limits and decide that it was probable we wouldn't get anything back, and we didn't.
Indeed. Now, this would be in 1946 or so, these lunar radar attempts?
Yes.
I hadn't...
It could be 45, 46.
Yeah.
45, 46.
I hadn't heard about the fact that you had tried. But you didn't expect a signal, you say, from basic calculations,
right.
either. Well, I might ask the more general question. which I had in the letter also, namely, do you agree with Hayes' description of the group?
Yes, I think that is a fair statement.
Mm-hmm. It seems like from Phillips also said that it seemed to him to be a fair statement of the way things were done.
If we could go back a little, though.
Yes?
You asked the question whether you thought that his account was either inaccurate, misleading, or incomplete. Now, I don't think that, but I think it was... it doesn't represent his outlook of those years. It's more egotistical
mm-hmm.
than he really is.
Mm-hmm.
I was surprised in that book, the way he kept referring to, I did that, this, and I did that for
Yes, him. I saw a strong flavor of that also.
Because that wasn't him at all. I think the essence of what we did was that we worked remarkably well as a team.
Mm.
And my feeling was that we were, I thought in the few years afterwards, that this was perhaps one of the more important examples of what we thought was the new way of doing research.
Mm-hmm. Teamwork, yeah.
A team of people getting together with different backgrounds.
You say you thought this around 1950 or
that's right.
Something like that, yes.
I had the feeling that Hay had altered this in his more recent write-up because, and this is a very personal view, I think he's been a little bit disappointed in some ways because I don't think there's much doubt that we triggered off the enormous development of radio astronomy. It would have happened, and I don't think
sure.
there's any doubt about that.
But the group made several basic discoveries, there's no doubt about that also.
And we had the right access to the people who were influenced by it.
Mm-hmm.
Appleton played a part in that, although at the time he caused a great deal of annoyance.
Which Hay very diplomatically describes, as you saw in the book.
Yes. At the time we felt very bitter about it,
mm-hmm.
because he never did a thing.
Yes.
But in retrospect, he did a lot, in that he brought it out into the open. He had the traction or the power in the scientific establishment to get over that here was something new and vital
mm-hmm.
going on, and it might not have been so effective without him. But on the other hand, I think he was very silly and petty to want his name attached to things that he hadn't done the slightest thing
for. Yeah, except for a few phone calls or something.
That's
yeah.
right, absolutely.
Talking about it, yeah. So... but going back to what you were commenting on Hay's disappointment, do you mean disappointment in that the group is not recognized?
The Royal Society.
Something like that, yes.
And I think he jolly well should have been.
Yes, yes.
I made one minor attempt to try and do something about it, but I wasn't strong enough to do it.
Yeah, right.
I can't understand why he wasn't. He was a very unassuming man, and he wasn't pushing enough. And
mm-hmm.
that's why I see this change in talking about I. He would never have done that
yes.
in the earlier days. It would have always been we.
Yes. And, perhaps this is why he doesn't want to talk to me. He somehow feels that he's gotten a bad shake. And
yes.
Although you would think that maybe that would be a reason to talk, too. I don't know.
Mm. He's been, since then, my university have given him an honorary degree. An honorary DSC,
mm-hmm.
Which is have, because he did quite a bit of work in recent years in backing up their efforts in a similar field. They're doing work on radio meteorology.
I see. But this is work in the 50s or 60s.
Oh, later.
Yeah,
the,
right.
60s and 70s.
Yeah. Well. Let's just go down these questions on page 2 here. When you were working in 45, 46, 47 on what we now call radio astronomy, if someone asked you what kind of work were you doing, what would you answer? Or what is your profession? What would you say?
Oh, I was an electrical engineer.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I would not have said I was a radio astronomer.
I didn't think so, but you were an electrical engineer. Did this change at all towards the late 40s?
No. Mm-hmm. No, sir. I was more than an electrical engineer. I would say an engineer.
Yeah. Because you were...
To that degree.
Right. Now, also...
An engineer physicist, up to a point.
Physics engineering or physics, yeah. Also, over that period of time, as you were writing papers about your results, now, to whom were you addressing these papers? To other people that we would now call radio astronomers, or were you addressing them to radar engineers?
The world in general.
The world in general.
The scientific world.
Uh-huh.
They wouldn't be readable to people who were not scientifically minded. But
yeah.
We felt we were opening up, the frontiers of physical knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
I genuinely believe that.
Yeah.
That this was exciting new discovery. It wasn't to prove any particular theory,
right,
or fill in any particular gap in knowledge, but we happened to get into an area where we were discovering new things almost every day.
Mm-hmm. Right.
And that was very exciting.
And you felt this at that time. This is not something in retrospect that you're...
Yes, yeah. We positively did.
Yeah.
Now, neither I nor Stuart, nor Phillips for that matter, had any ideas of being professional research workers. This had just come out of our wartime activity.
Mm-hmm.
And we didn't think, I think this is true of the other people, I don't know whether Phillips told you this, that... We never thought of the idea of publishing it to enhance our status,
mm-hmm.
Prepare the ground for a post-war career.
Yes, yes.
But I suspect that Hay did.
Mm-hmm.
But he wouldn't communicate that to us.
Yes.
I think he really saw it as filling in the gap of his 9 lost years teaching.
Mm-hmm.
If you see the difference.
For the scientific career that he had wanted to have, yes.
Right.
Whereas you were... more engineers, or at least you were more of an engineer.
That's right.
Phillips did tell me that when he went back to teaching actually himself in 48 or something like that, when the group disbanded or at least changed its nature, and he now really regrets that decision. He thinks that was the wrong thing to do, that he should have, gone to work for Martin Ryle or something like this,
Yes, I would have thought he should have done.
Yeah. But he did it for various personal reasons, and
yes, he married one of the girls who worked on his analysis.
On the data that you were taking, you mean?
That's right.
I see.
Yes. Unfortunately, she died about 10 years ago, I believe.
I see. Okay. Now, the question number 9 here about data acquisition and reduction, I gather then that you weren't so much involved in that as Phillips was.
No, he was the man who did that. As a matter of interest, we had a number of girls who'd been selected for their numeracy. They were really predictor operators, selected predictor operators.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the predictors that we use for anti-aircraft work. They were manually controlled in the early days.
Right.
And we had special psychological tests for the sort of girls who could do this work adequately.
I see.
And he had 3 or 4 of them who did the analysis, because, of course, we had no computers available. It was all done by longhand with resolving very difficult equations with lots of approximations.
Well, you had computers, but they were female. And
that's right. Yes, absolutely.
It
took 6 months to do things which nowadays will be done in overnight.
Right. Let me just get straight. These predictor correctors, this was for predicting what exactly?
Oh, the predictors on the gun sight.
Yes.
Predicted the future position of an aircraft and from the present position.
And one could calculate quickly enough by hand?
The machine did the calculations for you.
But you had to punch in the right things.
You didn't punch it. It was a matter of following an aircraft. And by virtue of the course, which was by the machine, in an electromechanical device.
I see.
It would throw up what the future position would be.
I see. So
in relation to a shell before. In other words, it's
right. So the
in the data are the ballistics.
The girls were looking through a sight then.
Yes.
In tracking the plane.
Yes, absolutely.
I see.
Yes. Well then, you see, the later stages, we fed in the radar data. And indeed, in those early stages, by daylight they would feed in optical data.
Yes.
By night, they would feed in the position of the aerials of the radar equipment. And that was done on what we call maxlips. These are an electrical transmitter,
right.
Position transmitter, of course.
Right.
Now, the girls had to follow that, and their purpose, or at least their skill, really boiled down to resolving or eliminating the jitters of the operators who were following with the radar equipment.
Mm-hmm. Yes, I see what you mean, right.
And so getting out a true course for the aircraft.
Right.
Now, the sort of girls who were used on that fitted with the requirements for doing our analytical work. It arose because we were doing another part of our establishment. We were doing work on predictors.
Yes.
And we found the girls they brought in from gunsights for that were very appropriate to do our analytical
work. To do a lot of intensive mathematical sort of work.
Yeah.
Now, you made a comment before we put the tape on about, this might be a good chance to put it in, about the fact that the radio astronomy effort, as we would call it now, was only a small part of the group's effort. Now, do you mean a small part of even what you four people were working on?
A small part of what we four people were working on.
What sort of other things were you working on simultaneously during those years?
I, for example, was working on the errors introduced by diffraction over screens.
Mm-hmm.
We use screens on gun sights.
Ground screens.
That's right.
Yeah.
And I did a lot of work on the errors produced by these screens.
Mm-hmm.
This led to a very interesting piece of work on the Fresnel zones.
Right.
The fact that I could predict the errors that would be caused by them.
Mm-hmm.
And we had screens too to eliminate ground clutter.
Right, right.
This is one of the things we introduced during the V1 range.
Mm-hmm.
Because we were at very low angle for the pipes, you see.
Right.
These applied even with the American SDR 584 automatic following radar equipment, because they really beat the flying bomb. There's no doubt about that, coupled with proximity fuses, which we also worked on. But the screens were necessary, and they started introducing errors.
So oh, yes.
I did a lot of work on that.
Well, what would be another example of things that we worked on?
Now, I was also concerned with the calibration of equipment, and we had contacts throughout the United Kingdom with all the gun sight batteries.
Mm-hmm.
We had to organize calibration test programs.
So your primary effort then was very much as the same as the war, although of course not as pressing.
Yes, thinking about it, I mentioned a bit later on, I was also concerned with field army radar. We were looking into, indeed, making rapid strides in the use of radar for spotting of field artillery,
mm-hmm.
as opposed to flash spotting.
Right.
In checking the accuracy of gunnery,
mm-hmm.
the traditional way was to do it by spotters who took visual bearings from different places.
Right.
When the shell burst.
Right.
We adapted coastal centimetric radar equipment to do these observations, and I did a lot of tests on the accuracy.
I see. Now,
going on at the same time.
Then the military, however, was willing to let you do spend a certain fraction of your time on this, because once again, it did affect the performance level of low frequency radars. And,
that's right. Yes. I don't think they realized the intensity of the effort we were putting into it. Well, perhaps they did at certain levels and accepted that this was could be of some importance.
Yeah.
Moreover, at that time, the military effort was winding down.
Sure, of course. Well, Phillips made the point that there were a lot more people than things to do.
Yes.
Also, and although it seems like you're saying a bit of the opposite, that you had more than enough things to do. It was just a matter of...
Oh, yes, we did.
It was a matter of interest. How much modification of the radars were required to use them for either meteor radar work or radio astronomy?
Comparatively small.
Mm-hmm.
One must be frank about that. They were important, but not overwhelming. The basic needs were already there.
Yeah.
Namely of turntables with sufficient accuracy. I did go into the possibility of more accurate tracking.
Right.
Reducing the random errors in them, this sort of thing. And then we came up against insuperable problems without redesigning them. I tried various devices that didn't make improvements, but we couldn't do anything fundamental.
Yeah.
So we made the best use of what we've got available. But at the same time, I ought to mention that a lot of material started coming back from Europe, and there were huge dumps of radio and radar equipment.
Right.
Of various kinds. And we used to take a lorry down to these and had carte blanche to collect whatever we thought was useful.
Mm-hmm.
And it was by these means that we were able to make the conversions we needed. So we didn't call for any supplies of new material.
I see.
There was cannibalization of equipment.
Right, right.
This is how we started Lovelock, is... story.
Well, okay, we come down to that point. Hay, as you saw, described this visit that you and he made to Manchester. Can you tell me what your recollections of that visit are?
Yes, I think we ought to go back a little bit.
Okay.
Because he left something out, or he didn't express it in the way I recall it so strongly, and that is that Blackett and he published a little paper.
Yes.
I thought it was in Nature, but he...
No, it's in the Proceedings of the Royal Society.
You've seen it?
Yes, yes, I have. 41 or so.
I remember, because I never kept a copy of this. We checked, they did some calculations of this, which purported to show what the if you like, what the echoing area of a cosmic ray.
Exactly.
And we did it. Made an effort to check this and thought they were an order of magnitude out.
Mm-hmm.
And so tactfully, I remember this well. We sat down together and worked this out, and Hayes then decided to write a letter to Blackett and say, we don't think you're right about this, that with the present performance of equipment, you are very unlikely to be able to detect with available equipment, that is. A much better proposition would be for you to look at the beginnings of radio astronomy that we have been working on.
Mm-hmm.
And he told them about meteors and so forth, which were the obvious correlation with cosmic rays.
Right.
So Lovell then came down and had a chat to us.
So this letter was sent, and that was the reason that Lovell came down,
yes,
as you remember.
Absolutely.
I see.
He told him that his cosmic ray work wouldn't work.
Mm-hmm.
That bluntly is what it is.
Mm.
It was put a little more tactfully than that, but that's what it amounted to.
Right, right.
Lovell then said, well, I wondered where he could start. He hadn't got any equipment.
Mm-hmm.
And it was said, well, we thought we could find some old equipment, which we would persuade the... anti-aircraft command to release to him.
Right.
They've been very helpful to us, you see. General Pyle took great interest in our activities. And quite without real authority, we were authorized to take some operational equipment up to Manchester.
Mm-hmm.
Which is what we did. We went and had a chat first with them to discuss what should be done. And my practical team, so to speak, prepared an early Mark I radar equipment, anti-aircraft radar equipment, with a vertical-looking aerial system, which I personally drove up to Manchester.
I see.
Installed in the yard in the city.
So Lovell had no person who really could gather such a thing together and get it working. It was essentially you that did it.
We took up an actual working piece of equipment and handed it over to
mm-hmm.
him. And it was then later, of course, he found great difficulty with the ignition and electric trains, one thing and another.
Right. Moved out to Jodrell Bank.
Yeah.
But I forget now, he probably talks about in his book, did he then try to do solar observations in Manchester?
I think his main interest was on meteors initially.
That's right, no, you're right, it was all purely meteors.
Yes.
So essentially you said, well, cosmic rays may not make a big enough ionized trail, but meteors looks like the way to go, you know.
That's right, and this can start you off into this field.
Right.
Now, this was another of the things that upset me, that Lovell never, in his early books,
yes.
I don't think at any stage later on, ever made any reference to the help that he got from us.
No, he doesn't.
I always took a rather poor view of that.
Yeah. He apparently keeps a very accurate diary. These historical books he's written two now about Jodrell Bank, one that
yes.
goes up through 57 and one afterwards. And so he has an awful lot of detail, but I don't think there's any mention of this.
Now, Stuart, who was our meteor specialist,
right.
went and spent some time with him at Jodrell Bank. I
mm-hmm.
went there once, but Stuart went several times.
Mm-hmm.
This is before they had the big dish built.
Oh, sure, this is long before that. Are you talking about Stuart did this in the early 50s now? Or?
No.
In the 40s, yeah. Sure, the big dish didn't come along until 10 years after that.
Right.
Yeah.
I was out of it long before.
Right.
But in the 40s, he got an MZPI, which was Canadian equipment, I recall.
Mm-hmm.
I went there. But Stuart went and passed on a great deal of help from our earlier work.
Mm-hmm.
He picked up where we left off, really.
Right, exactly. And he really carried the ball, of course.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
He's a great publicist.
Oh, yes, yes.
And this is the difference between he and Hay.
Yes, that's right. Well, a couple of scientific points. Phillips has told me about this fluctuating source that was found in Cygnus. Do you have any particular recollections about that and what you made of it at that time?
Yes, I well recall that. It was with some excitement that this was noted, and we all went and looked at it, so to speak. And the cause of it at the time, we thought, well, this must be that we've got a similarity in this area of a number of suns.
Exactly.
And that was about as far as it went. We thought that it can't be the general level because the general levels are static, so to speak.
Mm-hmm. Right.
We never thought of the idea of two distinct sources. I mean, if I remember rightly, the current theories are that there are in fact two complete galaxies.
Well, there's one galaxy, but there are two regions outside of the galaxy from which the radio radiation comes.
Yes.
But that was way along the line, and they're only a couple arc minutes apart.
Yes.
So it was a point source as far as your beam was concerned.
That's right. Absolutely.
But in any case, your Nature paper makes it clear that you feel it's intrinsic to the source.
That's right.
And I was wondering, do you remember if the possibility was discussed at all about propagation effects anywhere along the path could be causing it?
I don't think so. No, I cannot recall that we ever thought on those lines at all. We were puzzled by it.
Right.
That is true. And I remember we weren't in a position to give any satisfactory theoretical explanation for it, and that this was, we felt, was a gap.
Right.
As most of the other things we did, we were able to back it up with a little bit of theoretical analysis.
Right, it made more sense than, in some sense. But now, why was this not followed up? For instance, I guess a lot of monitoring of it to try to understand its nature.
Yes, well, we haven't the resources, of course, the time, the human or the time resources,
mm-hmm.
or, for that matter, the equipment to go very much further.
Mm-hmm.
And, of course, we were closed down soon afterwards. That's really what it amounts to. We couldn't follow up any of these things.
Yeah. Well, but what I'm getting at is a lot of time was spent, maybe it's not as much as I think, in mapping the sky.
Because that was something that could be done with the equipment as it stood. Cygnus was just one aspect of something that could be done with that equipment.
Right, and of course there might be other sources around.
Yes, we were looking for other sources.
Right.
That was the whole point. I think you're absolutely right. We thought, well, there ought to be others that were doing it, well, of a similar nature.
Yeah, sure. A very reasonable thing. Do you remember at all about any discussions about the nature of this galactic radiation that you were picking up?
Oh, yes. Well, there were a number of discussions on this. And, of course, we were in contact then with all sorts of authorities of different kinds, like Fred Hoyle.
I see.
We used to go to meetings of the Royal Astronomical Society, and there were several important meetings with big men like Alf Vane.
Right.
I remember him particularly on one occasion when he and Fred Hoyle were at the same meeting. Fred Hoyle got up and said that Alf Vane was talking absolute rubbish.
Uh-huh.
It was rather dreadful, isn't it? I didn't realize how rude scientific people could be.
Yes. Well, not all of them, but some of them can, yeah.
Yes. There was a lot of discussion with the theoretical physicists.
This is all prior to 48. Now you're talking,
yes,
right?
Within my time,
right? Which extends to what date is that?
I finished sometime in 47.
In 47, even, I see.
Yes.
Well, we'll come to that. So, but now, what did you make of this radiation yourself, or what did the group make of it?
Mean whether it was interstellar or...
Yes, and what its mechanism of emission might be, and...
As far as I was concerned, we didn't. It was a case of what the theoretical physicists were telling us were
mm-hmm.
the possibilities.
So you were just going to make the map and let them figure it out?
That wasn't the end of it, of course. I mean, one would expect to be carrying on to elucidate it further, and indeed to plot the map much more accurately.
Right.
I think the most striking thing was the lack of correlation between the optical pattern picture and the radio picture.
Right, right.
There was only a rough correlation, and of course, going back, I think this is Janicki's measurements were less detailed than ours.
Sure, much less resolution, yeah.
But this was a very important difference. What were the differences? Why were they? And we got involved in everything from red dwarfs to, well, the whole gamut of the ideas that were circulating in at that time on the differences between the different stars.
Did you have any contact with traditional optical astronomers?
Oh, yes, most certainly.
Can you remember which ones?
We had close liaison with them. Indeed, I was going to Brazil in 1947.
Oh, yeah, for that eclipse?
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, I built some special equipment to do so during the eclipse. But it was ruined by the disaster of the optical people being killed, except for Hunter.
I didn't hear about this.
Oh, yes, this was very important. The Admiralty the Admiralty-controlled Greenwich Observatory.
Right.
But we'd had a lot of contact with them. There was a man called Newton.
Yes.
And Hunter, who was a very nice fellow, he became the senior man there for a time, I think,
mm-hmm.
afterwards. But we discussed all these things with them, and we got them interested in this radio approach to astronomy. I was just trying to remember who the Astronomer Royal was at that time.
Was Woolley? No, he wasn't. He wasn't there. There was a Jones before Woolley. Spencer Jones?
Ah, Spencer Jones, that's right.
Right.
Now, he wasn't terribly interested,
mm-hmm.
but his assistants were.
Mm-hmm.
And this expedition to the eclipse of 1947 was planned, and we were invited to organize radio observations of the sun.
I see.
So I built some special equipment. I jacked up the performance by using Zicker techniques, in effect improving the signal-to-noise ratio.
By using what kind of techniques?
Zicker.
Dickey?
Yes.
Yeah, it's pronounced Dickey, right.
Yes.
Right.
We used to call it Zicker.
Yeah.
Switching.
That's right.
Which I was doing electrically rather than biomechanically.
Right, right.
So I built a special receiver, essentially one of our radar receivers, but with enormous modifications in the recording facilities. And we built it all so that it could be dismantled easily for transit to see.
Right.
But we decided that without the optical people there, I carried too much responsibility.
Mm-hmm.
It would have been a disaster. And Carroll, who was the man from the Admiralty, I think he was scientific advisor to the Admiralty, he was going to go with me after the optical people had left. They'd got more elaborate things to erect than we had.
Mm-hmm.
He agreed that in the circumstances, perhaps it were better to abandon the whole thing. But this is just to illustrate that we were closely associated with the optical
people. Well, right, but now... just to finish the story, so these people left before you, and there was a plane crash?
They crashed at Dakar and killed two of the principal scientific people, and the third one, who was a Dr. Hunter,
mm-hmm.
he escaped with minor injuries, but it destroyed the most important part of the equipment, too.
Right, and so you didn't go at all?
We didn't go.
Right.
So it was an anticlimax, but I thought... would just illustrate.
Well, it's an interesting story. I hadn't heard it before.
It's recorded in Nature.
I'm sure it is at that time. I just never heard of it. The optical people, you said that they needed to go. You couldn't just go yourself. Was this because you wanted to have their data?
I wanted their support, really.
But not to run the radio equipment.
Yes, but... setting up my radio equipment without the optical people with me at the time was a bit of a hazard of occupation in that they would know, for example, would have all the astronomical data that I would...
as to where to point the thing and...
Yes, absolutely.
And times and
yes,
so forth, right.
It had been overcast and it had got to be set up.
Right.
I would be working with no assistance, you see, because they were going to provide all the technical assistance.
Right, and of course, in fact, they'd have nothing to do if it were overcast also.
No, precisely, but then they could have got me set up.
Right, right.
And if there had been a patch in the clouds, they could have confirmed things, but I could do my measurements whether it was overcast or not.
Right. But do you remember if you were interested indeed in trying to correlate, or planning to correlate... the radio with the optical...
Yes, we wanted to try and establish whether the radiation came from the chromosphere or what.
Right, right. You
we were looking really for whether the continuous level of radiation from the sun, which we could now detect, of course.
Right.
The
quiet sun, you mean? Yeah.
The quiet sun. Whether this, whether it was associated with the chromosphere, and if there were flares or anything else at the time,
right.
What effects the screening by the moon would have.
Right, right. As an aside, are you aware that of the Russian experiment at that same eclipse, where they had on a ship, they had in a bed spring array or something like this, and they made some measurements at VHF, and the way they tracked the sun was to, the ship was at anchor, or tied up to a dock, they moved the entire ship around.
Oh, yes.
And so they had someone telling the captain how to rotate it in azimuth in order to have this antenna track the sun.
That, same eclipse,
that was the same one. They were in a bay in off the coast of Brazil.
Well,
it was only published in Russia. In you know, what didn't come to light in the West until several years later. I don't think.
Well, it was soon after that, of course, and it came out.
Right. Well, let me go back to the visit of Radcliffe that Hay mentions to your group. Do you remember that?
Well, we knew Radcliffe well because when. We started. He ran the radio school,
mm-hmm.
and we'd had contact with him over the years.
Right.
Time. Now, I don't remember him coming specifically towards the end of the war.
But it wouldn't have been that big a deal, since he was well known to you.
He wasn't
right.
at all. He was in touch with us anyway.
Right.
Frequent contact. Well, not frequent, but occasional contact throughout the war.
Okay. Also, now, you weren't directly involved in the media radar work, but I was wondering, do you have any recollections concerning the Giacobinid? How is it pronounced? The meteor shower?
The Giacobinid.
Giacobinid?
Yes, Giacobinid.
Right.
Yes. Oh, I had a lot to do with that.
Okay.
I built the photographic equipment.
I see. Could you tell me about that, then?
Well, very simple. let me go back a little bit. Stuart had been involved in the other work in AORG with doing photographic recordings of predictor dials. And he'd helped out in devising equipment, in other words, for the operational studies on gunnery practice
uh-huh.
in relation to radar.
Now, right.
He had designed a camera for this use, and we decided that for the purposes of monitoring the forthcoming Giacobinid shower, we couldn't do what we would like to do. We couldn't record adequately the traces
mm-hmm.
From a different type of equipment for which Stuart had designed his camera. So I took this on and altered it radically, greatly improved its performance by using larger aperture lenses.
Right.
And at the same time, I applied a brightening display system to the radar equipment, so that when there was a signal, it brightened up.
I see.
According to its amplitude, you see.
It was easily recorded.
Yes, that's right. And this enabled us. We didn't know what we were going to get. We just wanted to record it as well as possible. But one of the results of it was that we were able to get a record of the movement of the meteor in range. And from this deduce the radiant velocity.
Right, right.
And that, I think, was one of the worthwhile results of that study.
Indeed. Now, were you involved in the astronomical analysis, so to speak, of that?
Well, yes. Well, only as far as I went through the film that my camera, because it became my camera,
yeah.
and I spotted these useful records and calibrated them, was able to work out the velocity.
I see. Right.
That part I personally did.
Right.
I did it over.
And And that resulted in a paper, first of all, I think in Nature, Hay, Parsons, and Stewart, is that correct?
And my part was really that bit of the equipment and deducing the velocity.
Right. Was that the only paper in which you were involved in some radar work that was published?
In relation
to radio astronomy, right?
Yes.
Right. Okay. Well, I guess unless you think of some other things in terms of the effort, then we come to sort of the end of the story as to how the group came to a halt.
Well, that is really very simple. It basically was the end of the war.
Well, but you went on for 2 years after the war, and you were getting very good results.
Ah, yes, but you see, we were living without any proper mandate.
But, yeah, a little bit on the sly, you mean?
Absolutely.
Yes.